with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Another gorgeous day. What a string we're putting together here, huh? It took a while to get some pleasant summer weather. Actually, it took a while for things to heat up, and we had plenty of that over the past couple of weeks. Very hot, humid weather with still a lot of rain. And finally, we've hit it just about right. Dry and mild, you know. Over the weekend, we had highs, 70, mid to upper 70s on Saturday. About 77 was the high. Yesterday, a little warmer, low 80s. And that's where we'll be today, maybe as high as 83 or 84, but low humidity levels, so not oppressive at all. And just a lot of blue sky and sunshine. Ideal. Ideal. Well, we have a good program today, and we'll meet our first guest in just a moment or so. She is Robin Weber, and she is Director of Marketing and Communications for the National Aviary. Have you ever been there? It's in Pittsburgh, you know, and that's the National Aviary. So we'll talk about that with Robin. It'd be a nice trip, afternoon trip, day trip down to Pittsburgh. Also later on the program today, we'll meet some of the cast members of the Musical Theater Guild's summer show. It's called Jerry's Girls. It's kind of a review with a number of great tunes written by composer-lyricist Jerry Herman. And there's a lot of great tunes this guy's penned over the years, a lot of great Broadway songs. I've never seen the show, and we'll find out about it a little bit later on the program today. We're also going to be talking about Alzheimer's today on the final segment of the program. Guests will include Midge Hobaugh from St. Barnabas Health System and also Sarah Murphy from the Alzheimer's Association. So all of that coming up a little bit later on the program today. And tomorrow we're going to be finding out about the Sachsenberg Carnival, which is all of a sudden just around the corner, is it not? Yeah. And what else do I have scheduled tomorrow? Oh, how about the Pennsylvania Data Center? Ever heard of it? No, this is not a place where they keep track of what you buy at the grocery store and that sort of thing. But it's more like census data. Interesting census data. Interesting facts. We'll talk with Tim Schock about that on tomorrow's program. And lots more to come as well as we move through the week. And head now toward the middle of July. Yeah, last week we were getting ready for the 4th of July, and by the time we get to this coming weekend, we'll be halfway through July. Whoosh, whoosh, wow. Okay, and we're going to get moving here because we got a lot to talk about today. We'll take a quick break and then back to talk with Robin Weber from the National Aviary. Nice to have you with us here on It's Your Turn today.
Dr. William Saar of Butler Health System with the story of a remarkable recovery.
Come fall, Dale's mind wanders toward the woods. I want the rest of him to follow, but his ankle wouldn't allow it. With the latest technology and our talented caring team, we were able to get him back out there. It's about improving the quality of people's lives every day, and Dale is proof.
At Butler Health System, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care, but more importantly, we know why we have to.
Going to be talking about a treasure, folks, and it's right in our own backyard. It's the National Aviary down in Pittsburgh, and visiting with us on this segment of the It's Your Turn program, Dave Mullarkey is my name, by the way, visiting with us is Robin Weber. She is Senior Director of Marketing and Communications at the National Aviary. Robin, nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Yes, thanks so much for having me.
I'm sure that we have listeners. I think most folks have probably heard of the National Aviary. I'm sure we have some who have never visited. Where exactly are you located, Robin?
We're on the north side in Pittsburgh, so just close to PNC Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you get there, it's pretty easy to navigate around the north side. There are some one-way streets there, but you won't be able to miss it. And it's the National Aviary, right? That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's correct. A lot of people don't know that the National Aviary is right here in Pittsburgh. We were designated the National Aviary back in 1993 under a bill signed in by President Clinton.
Have you been there long? Does the history go back before that of having an aviary there?
Yes. We were established in 1952, actually, and so 66 years.
So tell us, how many birds do you have? How many species of birds do you have at the National Aviary?
Well, we have more than 150 different species, but in total more than 500 birds, and some mammals, too.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a lot of feeding that has to take place every day, right?
Yes, it's quite the production. Our kitchen is very elaborate, a very elaborate process. And just like a restaurant, we have to keep all the nuts and berries and fruits separate from all the meats, separate from all the fish. It's a major production to feed 500-plus birds.
Do you have some rare birds there, Robin?
We have quite a few rare birds here. Rare in the sense of you can't see them many other places, but more importantly, rare in the sense that some of our birds are endangered, critically endangered, and we even have a few that are extinct in the wild.
Hmm. Are there birds that couldn't possibly survive in our climate? I'm thinking of, you know, like tropical birds or something.
Yes, absolutely. We're actually very well known for our tropical birds. We have two large rooms, the wetlands and the tropical rainforest, which feature birds from around the world, many of which are native to very warm and tropical climates. And those rooms very well reflect those habitats.
What are some of the birds that you would find from a tropical climate at the National Aviary?
Well, our parrots are very popular. We have a variety of different types of parrots, large macaws down to a small sun conure and lorikeets that you can even hand feed. We also have flamingos. Many people are familiar with our flamingos. We have a whole flock of flamingos in our wetlands. And then some more unusual birds. I mentioned before, we're very well known for our Guam rails, which is a bird that's extinct in the wild and is native to the island of Guam in the South Pacific Islands. And we actually breed that bird and are helping with the reintroduction efforts there.
What's the name of the bird again?
It's the Guam rail.
Huh.
It's a little brown bird that is kind of elusive, fast-moving, and lives in our tropical rainforest.
You mentioned the flamingos. Pink flamingos, are they pink?
They are pink, yes. We have several different varieties of pink birds in our wetlands exhibit, all of which are pink because of the food they eat, just like our flamingos.
So flamingos aren't born pink?
They aren't. Actually, we hatched flamingos here last summer, and they're a gray, white, gray, light, like a light gray, white color when they're first hatched. And then as they grow, they actually reach full size, and they're still kind of a grayish color, and then they change pink right around a year or so.
And that's because of their diet?
That is, yes.
Hmm. They must grow pretty fast. I'm thinking of the, you know, we have the eagle cams for the past couple of years. We've been able to watch the hatching of eagle chicklets. And my goodness, if you blink for a couple of minutes, they're grown already. They grow very, very fast. Flamingos,
yes,
are pretty big birds. Do they grow fast, too?
Yes, and most of the birds here will reach full size in just a few months. So just like the baby birds you think of in your backyard where they nest and hatch and you watch them and they're fledging a few weeks later, a month later, the same applies, you know, depending on the bird, obviously. It varies a little bit, but, yeah, they grow so fast. It's just amazing to see. We hatch a lot of birds at the National Aviary, you know, right in the exhibits often.
Hmm. I'm sure this varies probably tremendously from species to species, but do birds live a long time?
Yeah, it does vary quite a bit from species to species. Some of the longest-lived birds are actually parrots that can live to be, some of the large species live to be 80 years old.
Oh, my. I had no idea.
Yes. I know. A lot of people don't know that. It's one of the things that makes parrots such a challenging pet. They're very smart birds. They have the intellectual problem-solving skills of a six-year-old child, and the emotional temperament of, say, a two-year-old. So imagine that in an 80-year lifespan. It really is a big commitment to take care of a parrot, and it's something a lot of people don't know when they think about getting a bird like a parrot as a pet.
And for heaven's sake, some of them can even talk, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's mimicking, actually, but because in the wild, you figure the birds are mimicking the sounds around them and the other birds, and it's a way to help protect them from predators. But yes, when you have a bird living in your home, it may mimic the things it hears, including things that you say.
We're speaking, listeners, to Robin Weber from the National Aviary on the north side of Pittsburgh. Speaking of predators, there are birds that are predators. Do you have any birds of prey there at the National Aviary?
We absolutely do. They're very popular, of course. Probably one of our most popular birds of prey is our bald eagles. We have two bald eagles that live in a habitat where visitors can come and see them every day. And we also have two bald eagles that free fly and or are on glove or walking around in our pre-flight shows that we offer twice daily. So it's really a unique chance to see bald eagles up close. But we have a number of birds of prey here at the National Aviary. We have Andean condors. We're well known for them. And stellar sea eagles. And then we have a variety of hawks and falcons. And one of our most popular attractions in the summertime is our free-flight outdoor show called Soar, which takes place on our rooftop, and the birds fly freely over the park above visitors' heads.
Hmm. Are they trained to come back, or do they know to come back for food? Or?
Yeah, absolutely, they do. We have a very experienced staff of education trainers who work with our birds to allow us to be able to exhibit the natural behaviors that they portray in the wild. We are able to work with them through a relationship building process and positive reinforcement training so that they can participate in these ways. And one of the ways is this free flight show. So the birds will open the doors of their homes. They'll fly out, they'll circle overhead. One of our really neat birds that we have is called a black kite. And it's its own species. And we're the only place in North America that has them. And they are famous for the ability to catch their food and eat it while flying. And so our trainers throw food in the air. The birds are circling overhead. They grab it from the air and eat it. And they're just flying right over your heads. It's so cool.
Well, that would be something to see. And that's on the rooftop, eh?
Yes, absolutely. Yep, through Labor Day, twice daily.
I'm sure there are some folks who have never been to the National Aviary who are wondering, when you go inside, when you go in the main door, are the birds all flying around free in there, or are they contained? Explain that to us, Robin.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked, because it is something that I think people don't know what to expect when they come to the National Aviary.
Yeah.
So many of our rooms are free flight rooms. So if you imagine a giant greenhouse full of lush plants, but then also full of birds that are just living and flying freely all around you, two of our rooms, we have two very large rooms like that. We also have a smaller free flight room called the Grasslands, and it is home to a number of small, brightly colored songbirds and finches, and it's just a very relaxing and peaceful place to get close to a variety of colorful birds. Now, I do have to say the birds of prey are not generally flying freely around you. Many people ask that, they are in behind glass, so no worries there.
Yeah, I think if you had hawks or eagles diving around, that might be a little intimidating, I would think.
Yes, you have a choice if you want to go see Soar or not. Otherwise, there's plenty of ways to view a variety of birds.
Is there educational material or videos or pamphlets or something that we can learn about the birds that we're looking at?
Yes, yes. You'll get a map and an informational flyer when you arrive. And actually, every half an hour, the National Aviary has programs that allow you to learn more about and get close to and even hand feed the birds that you're meeting as you visit. So when you, or even before your visit, take a look at our website. You can see the daily schedule and plan out your day that way. And there's a number, like I said, a number of different things taking place throughout the day, every half an hour, that'll teach you more about the birds and allow you to get up close and even in some cases hand feed.
Do you have any penguins there?
We have penguins. It's one of our most popular exhibits. We have 22 African penguins. They are a critically endangered species, and so we participate in a breeding program that's so important to maintaining that species for future generations. And they are native to South Africa, so many people ask us about the climate. And we in Pittsburgh have a very good climate for African penguins. It is an outdoor exhibit.
South Africa. Now, most folks, I think, if you stopped them in the street, would think that penguins were... mainly in Antarctica, not in South Africa.
It's interesting because of the world's species, most live in warm, world's penguin species, most live in warm climates.
Oh,
so our African penguins really aren't that unusual. We just hear a lot more about those Antarctic penguins.
I would never have guessed that in 1,000 years.
Yeah. I know, me either, until I started working here.
And penguins are kind of fun to watch, too. They're a little bit funny to watch them walk. Of course, they're all dressed in tuxedos, right?
I know. They really dress to impress. And our Penguin Point habitat is an indoor-outdoor habitat, so you can view the penguins from inside in the air conditioning or go outside. We have underwater viewing, and we have above-water viewing. And there's also rocks and caves where the penguins can live. And there's even some tunnels. So if you bring the kids or grandkids, the kids can, or adults, can crawl through and then pop their heads up in these little tunnels that put them right in the middle of the penguin habitat.
We're talking to Robin Weber. She is the Senior Director of Marketing and Communications at the National Aviary. You mentioned during the first part of our conversation, Robin, that you also have some mammals there, non-flying treats.
That's right.
At the National Aviary. One of them I know is a sloth, right?
Yes, our sloths have really become popular in recent years. We have a resident sloth, Wookie. He's been here for years and was very beloved. So several years ago, we had the opportunity to have a baby sloth, acquire a baby sloth, and we took that opportunity. His name is Valentino. He's 3 years old now, and really just captivated the public, brought more attention to Wookiee, and now recently we have added Vivian. She's 10 months old. She's our newest addition. You can see her every day in our Avian Care Center. And, so she's a young sloth, and we hope that someday she and Valentino, years down the road, once they're mature and grown, might get together. We'll encourage that to happen, of course, but we'll see.
Speaking of which, do the birds mate at the National Aviary?
Yes, absolutely. They have the opportunity we have a number of birds. Most of our birds are in pairs or in flocks. So there's more than one of any given species, and they do have the opportunity to live as they would, and they have the opportunity to get together and build their nests. It's often fun to see in our free flight habitats to look for the nests and to look for the birds that are actively working on their nests or that might have eggs or chicks there. So it's a really fun chance to see nature in action, and we have docents in our rooms and hallways that can help point things out to you when you visit.
I've heard that some birds do, they're kind of social creatures. Parakeets, for example, I've heard. If people have them at home, it's better to have a couple instead of just one.
Yeah, many birds are social. Not all birds. So we really pay attention to, the bird's natural tendencies and create habitats that are going to be comfortable for them and their preferences. Some birds do prefer to be solitary, whereas others, like our African penguins, they are very social and want to live in a colony, and we duplicate that experience here.
And some birds mate for life, right? And eagles, I think. Don't they come back to the same nest every year?
They do. They do, yes. Eagles, penguins do that. Our Andean condors, they will form a pair bond and stay together for years and years. So there are a number of species that stay together for years.
You must have a pretty big room for the condors. I mean, they're gargantuan, aren't they?
Yes, that is one. We're mostly an indoor facility. We're all one level, but our penguin habitat is partially outdoors, as I mentioned, and then our Andean condor habitat is entirely outdoors. So that's one of the areas. It's called Condor Court. They have a huge rocky area so that they can perch high up. They can splash on the ground. We have some pools there. It's... I don't know how big. It takes up half of the front of our building. So when you're driving up from the street, it's really a great way to be introduced to the National Aviary as you see our Andean condors living outside and often spreading their wings and taking in the sunshine.
And this is Andean as in Andes Mountains, I'm guessing?
Yes, correct. They're native to the high Andes habitats. That's one of the areas where the National Aviary has a strong field conservation presence as well. So it's wonderful to be able to not only showcase birds, but also to have the opportunity to highlight some of the conservation work that we do with that species in particular and others to help protect them into the future.
I don't want to give short shrift to the mammals here. Are there others besides the sloths?
Yes, we have. Recently, we have a few armadillos. And you can see armadillos in our show called Amazing Amazon. It's twice daily. It's also a immersive free flight show. But one of the other species that people find very interesting is our Malayan flying foxes. They are actually giant fruit bats, and we have five of them.
Oh, there's something I've never heard of before, let alone seen.
Yeah, they're quite unusual. They measure about 12 inches in length and have about a 4-foot wingspan. And when we opened our Canary's Call exhibit in 2013, that's when these giant fruit bats came to the National Aviary. They're native to Malaysia, and they do eat fruit exclusively. And we had a custom tree built for them. So you can see them climbing around. Often during the day, they are nocturnal. So in the early hours of the day, they're often sleeping. But as the day goes on and later in the afternoon, you'll often see them moving around. And we have a bat feeding every day at 3:30 that people can see the unusual way that the bats eat.
Do they hang upside down?
They do. Yes, absolutely. And then when they eat, they climb over, they put the fruit in their mouth, they chew it up, they swallow the juices, and they spit out the seeds.
Hmm.
Yes, it's very interesting.
Well, some people are a little bit intimidated by your ordinary garden variety bat. I mean, I can imagine a bat with a 4-foot wingspan.
They also aren't flying around with you, I will say that. But they really are surprisingly cute. Malayan flying foxes, they get their name because their face kind of looks like a fox.
Hmm.
Well, yeah, who would have thought?
Some birds are cute. Some birds are kind of funny. We mentioned penguins, especially when they're walking. And then you have at least one toucan down there, right? And they're kind of funny looking.
Yeah, absolutely. Honestly, we're very... lucky to have a group of arasaris, which is a small species of toucan that visitors can hand feed. So you'd be able to hold a grape and hand feed this small species of bird called a toucan. Called an arasari. Sorry, small species of toucan called an arasari.
The largest has to be the largest beak of any bird, at least relative to their size.
I don't know about that. There's some pretty large beaks. Relative to size. I think of hornbills as a species. They have pretty large beaks relative to their size. But you might be right about the toucan because their beaks really are fascinating to look at.
Are there more common birds there too? I'm thinking like of owls or something like that.
We do have a variety of owls. I'm trying to... Right now, we don't have owls that you can see on a daily basis, but we do have an owl encounter. We have a number of species of owls that are educational ambassadors, and they'll come out. You might see them in the hallways on glove if you're lucky, depending on the time you come. But they also do programs with schools, and we do a number of programs where we'll go and visit schools and community events and give talks and educational programs about our birds. So we actually take our birds off-site and go into the community with them. Owls are a popular species for that activity. So as I mentioned, you might see them just in the hallways, you know, greeting guests, but also you can participate in an owl encounter. And that's an activity. We have a number of activities that where you can pay extra. An owl encounter is $75 a person. Penguin encounters are $40 a person, et cetera. And with an owl encounter, you actually can dissect an owl pellet, learn what an owl eats, meet an owl up close, and hold it.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you'd need the glove because they're pretty sharp talons, right?
Yes, yes. You'd be with a trainer, obviously. So they help assist with this process and teach you everything you need to know in order to have this experience. It's a half hour long. It's really cool.
I understand one of your most popular exhibits has been undergoing renovation and is about to open very soon.
Yes, we're thrilled. Our tropical rainforest is actually, it's the oldest room at the National Aviary, and that's the room that we're renovating. So when I mentioned we opened in 1952, it was the tropical rainforest that was the entire National Aviary at that time. It has not undergone a renovation since 1952, and our glass was ready to be replaced. So one of the biggest parts of the project was removing 3,146 panes of glass one by one and replacing them with the new bird-friendly glass that we installed. And then we also took that opportunity to enhance the habitat even more. We built a really expansive, beautiful 15-foot waterfall that kind of falls down into three different pools at different levels and provides a beautiful place for our birds to bathe and play. And then we introduced just a number of new tropical plants and perching options so that the birds will be even closer to visitors than they were before. And it's opening this Friday, July 13th, and it's just coming along beautifully. We're almost there, and we're so excited to unveil it to the public this Friday.
Well, just in case people weren't planning a trip to the Amazon Basin, this is
a good option, absolutely.
Next best thing. One other thing I want to mention before we close here today. A lot of birds are much smarter than people would think. I mean, phrase calling someone a bird brain, that's really a misnomer, isn't it?
That is entirely the opposite of reality. Birds are surprisingly smart. I mentioned the parrots. Studies have shown that they have the problem-solving skills of up to a six-year-old child. And one of the smartest species of birds are crows.
You know, I saw a feature on that a couple of years ago on TV. I think it might have been on PBS. I'm not sure. But it actually demonstrated they have the capacity to create and use simple tools.
Yes, that is entirely true. They also, another thing that they can do is they will get food, hide it for later, and they also make sure that no other birds are watching when they grab the food and where they hide it, mm-hmm. so that nobody else can, none of the other birds could figure out where their food stash is. It's really incredible. Then they can remember and go back and retrieve it later. Sometimes I can't. I leave the room and I can't remember why I left. These birds are incredibly intelligent.
Where'd I leave my car keys? Yes.
Exactly, exactly.
They can also pass on these skills to their young, which was a pretty amazing documentary. Well, listen, we're out of time here. We could talk a lot longer. But, folks, if you've never been to the National Aviary on the north side of Pittsburgh, obviously it's right in our own backyard. And as you can tell from our conversation with Robin Weber, it's a real treat. Are you open every day of the year or what, Linda?
We're open every day of the year except for Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and Thanksgiving.
Well, we don't have to worry about that right now.
That's right.
Certainly open all summer. Robin Weber is Senior Director of Marketing and Communication at the National Aviary. Well, thank you, Robin. Delightful. Nice to have you with us today.
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All righty. So long now.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon. Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289. Back, listeners. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. Another gorgeous day. Makes Monday a little bit easier to deal with, right, when you got a spectacular day like today. Two guests join us on the next segment of the program. We're going to tell you about the Musical Theater Guild of Butler's summer show. It's called Jerry's Girls. Let's introduce our guests. First of all, Paula Floyd is here. Paula, good to see you. It's always good to see you.
It's great to see you. Thanks for having us.
And also with us is Arianna O'Donnell. Arianna, nice to have you here as well.
Thanks for having us. Glad to be here.
I meet you for the first time. Nice to meet you.
It's a wonderful time to meet you as well.
Jerry's Girls is the summer show, and it opens this coming weekend.
Yeah,
is that right?
Friday. Mm-hmm. Friday the 13th.
Uh-oh. Oh, well, we don't worry about that.
No.
The MTG Summer Show usually runs 2 weekends. Is that going to be the case?
That's correct. 13, 14, 20, 21, and then a Sunday matinee to close us out on the 22nd.
The other shows will be evening shows, right?
Correct. 7:30 curtain.
Mm-hmm. This is, I've not seen this show. It's a review, right?
That's right. Yes. Mm-hmm. It takes music from across Jerry Herman's catalog and puts it together into a review, just song after song after song.
It's kind of like a tribute to Jerry Herman, and not only to him, but to also the iconic women that played his roles over the decades.
So for folks who may be vaguely familiar with Broadway musicals and like the music of Broadway musicals, might not be familiar with all the shows that Jerry Herman wrote. He's a composer-lyricist, by the way.
Yes, he is. Born in 1931 and still alive in Miami today.
I did not know. Is he still working? I don't know. Probably not, huh?
I don't know.
Yeah. Probably his most famous show would be Hello, Dolly.
Mm-hmm. Still on Broadway now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just made a revival in 17, right?
Yeah. He also wrote La Cage, mm-hmm. La Cage aux Folles, mm-hmm. which has had multiple reincarnations on Broadway. In fact, I was reading it. It's the only show that has won the Tony for Best Revival twice.
Wow.
And it won the Tony for Best Musical when it originally premiered on Broadway.
Yeah.
Quite some time ago.
MAME is another show I think a few people might have heard of.
Yeah, that would rank pretty close to Hello, Dolly.
Right.
Up there with that. And at least some of his shows have been adapted into film versions, too, which mm-hmm. a lot of mm-hmm. people will have seen. Certainly MAME and Hello, Dolly, if nothing else.
There's a bunch of several lesser-known shows and even reviews that he pulled from to make this one as well. Mac and Mabel and Milk and Honey and Dear World are some of his lesser-known ones, but they have some really good music that we have a lot of in the show, actually.
So how does it work with the, do you have a large cast, Ariana, or?
I think we only have 13 people total. We have 3 dancers and 10 singers.
That's still pretty large for a summer show. The Guild has often chosen a small cast show for the summer.
Yeah, this show can be cast with different numbers of people. Sort of just depends on how many people are going to be singing songs, because there's so many solo numbers that you could really cycle a lot of people in or compact it down a bit.
Also, as much as you make it, our director has us changing costumes, changing personas every song, whereas you could scale it down if we were not changing costumes as much, but we're making it more realistic, which requires the personnel.
Who is the director, Ariana?
Patrick Erkman.
Okay, well, he's got a nice resume of directing shows. So both of you play multiple roles then, I guess, right?
Yes, yeah. That's much. What's different about the show is you never really adopt one persona or one character at a time. You know, you switch clothes, you're somebody new.
Who are the other principals in addition to the two of you?
Yeah, I would, well, first of all, it is an ensemble show, so really there are no principals. It's kind of pretty equally laid out there. But Sue Ann Aikman, Amy Kennard, well-known in the Butler theater community, Tammy Erkman, Chris Lilly, who has done a number of summer shows, Sammy Roth, Chris West, Madison Zajax, and Tina Zajax.
Wow. I was looking at the set list. There's a bunch of songs, and it's more than 30 songs.
Yeah. Well, remember, there's virtually no dialogue in this show. So it really just morphs one song into the next. The runtime is about an hour and a half.
So it's actually a little bit shorter than a typical Broadway musical.
Yeah, you throw in your intermission there, and you can plan to be at the theater for 2 hours, probably. But, yeah, it moves very quickly, I think.
One of the difficulties in doing a review, I've done a couple, is trying to put the songs all together and have them make sense. Now, sometimes in a review, you try to get a little plot line going here and lead from one to another. Not the case here?
It's kind of like a musical theater storybook, I would say, more than just a review. Every song is its own story. So in reality, the next song might not relate to the next one, but that's okay because it's kind of resets itself. It's a new story every song.
The venue is the William A. Leonard Production Hall at the far end of Memorial Park.
That's correct. Air-conditioned.
That's good to mention. Although, if we have the weather that we had this past weekend, you wouldn't have to worry about that. But the past 2 weeks, different story.
For sure.
Different story. So it's comfortable. However, it is an intimate venue, so you have a limited number of tickets to sell.
Right. I think about 70 seats per show. So you definitely want to get your tickets in advance. You can also get them at the door, but there is no guarantee that there will be tickets there. So you need to hop on our website, which is...
I was going to say, you can get them online, can't you?
Yes, mtgbutler.org, and click on tickets, and that will take you to a checkout.
I know. I was disappointed one year when I wanted to see a Musical Theater Guild summer show, and when I called for tickets, they were all gone.
What did you want to see?
Jacques Brel.
That's
quite a while ago.
Yeah.
They actually ran extra performances, and I still didn't get a seat.
We sold Nonsense out last year, too, so I know that there were some disappointed people. So you definitely want to get your tickets in advance.
The show opens this coming Friday, this weekend, Friday and Saturday, and then the following weekend it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But you can check online at, I guess it's the regular Musical Theater Guild website, right?
mtgbutler.org.
mtgbutler.org. It strikes me that many of the women who were central characters in Jerry Herman's shows were, and I'm painting with kind of a broad brush here, but they were all strong characters, almost dominant. You think of Dolly Levi and Auntie Mame and some of the other ones. These were not shy people. And he made sure that the songs that they sang brought them to the front as well. So, Paula, what are you singing?
I'm singing, what am I singing?
A lot.
if it's a sad song, I'm probably singing it. If You Walked Into My Life from MAME, I'm singing Shalom. What else am I singing here? You'd think I should know that right off the top of my head.
Well, you'll have them memorized by Friday. That's
no,
for sure.
I know them. I just don't remember what they are. Ariana and I are singing a duet, Kiss Her Now, which is a really pretty song. Time Heals Everything, which is an old song I remember hearing around. And It Only Takes a Moment from Hello, Dolly.
What about you, Ariana?
I'm singing the duet Kiss Her Now with Paula. I am singing a song in a vaudeville melody called Man in the Moon. One of the funniest and more difficult songs for me this show, I'm singing called Gooch's Song. It's really funny. And then I'm in...
What's that from? Is that from MAME? No.
That is from MAME.
It is? Okay. Mm-hmm. I couldn't remember.
Gooch is kind of the off-the-wall secretary of MAME, and it's a really wild character to play. I enjoy it a lot. And then other than that, I'm in a lot of ensemble numbers, which is the same for everyone. We have a lot of costume changes.
Yeah, sometimes Stack, this is an insider tip that I'm about to tell people. Sometimes our actors have to put layers of costumes on.
There's three instances for me alone where I actually have to wear two costumes at once.
Just not enough time for a complete change, huh?
Mm-mm. Oftentimes, you're either changing every 5 minutes or you have to change in 30 seconds or less.
Yeah, the next song might start and you're ripping off clothes in order to be out there on the stage again in that same song. So,
and with 13 people in the cast, probably not a lot of backstage room either.
No, there's not.
They actually just built us costume dressing rooms at the MTG building, which help, but still there's only so much time you have to get back there and change your clothes, so we all just make it work.
Sometimes the costume changes happen just off stage because we can't get to the building set side, which is where the costume rooms are.
I was going to ask where they are.
They're not new. What we did was a massive clean out. And we took a room that had formerly been the hat room, and I think there maybe were two hat rooms, but those were completely cleaned out, painted, and costume rooms were made.
Mm-hmm. There's stuff in that building from back in the beginning of the Musical Theater Guild, long before any of us.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff. We just had a 30-yard dumpster there late in the spring, massive clean out, making room for the new things, which is exciting.
By the way, a tip of the cap in memory of the late Bill Leonard, who was one of the founders of the Musical Theater Guild, along with Carl Nade and a couple of other people. And it was dear to his heart, you know, all through his life. He really made it go sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's appropriate that the performance hall is named after him. So if you want to see the review, Jerry's Girls, get online, get on the horn, get your tickets for the opening this weekend. So we know there's a lot of singing, Ariana. What about dancing and choreography? Is there much of that? Or?
Well, we have some very talented dancers. There is at least one dance number. It's a solo dance by Megan Sell. And then there are some dances within ensemble numbers, so you will get a wide variety of solo music. There's two duets, ours and one other, and a lot of ensemble with dance.
A solo dance with no singing?
Mm-hmm.
And some tap work?
There is a tap number.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes you get a solo dance in a Broadway show. Even in Oklahoma, there's a dream sequence. Remember that?
Yeah.
It's just dance. Done behind a scrim. And tap, that's special for Broadway shows.
Yeah.
You know, Anything Goes is the great one for tap.
Yes.
Got to be good tap dancing to do that. Jerry Herman wrote, we mentioned Hello, Dolly. We mentioned MAME. He also wrote La Cage aux Folles. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming there's at least a number or two from that show as well.
There is a whole medley at the end of La Cage aux Folles.
I've never seen that show. I've also never seen a show called Mac and Mabel. that he wrote. Anybody else familiar with that one?
Well, Mac and Mabel is about a Hollywood director named Max Sennett and his kind of rocky relationship with Mabel Normand, who became one of his most famous actresses in the silent film era. And that musical is kind of like a giant flashback of their relationship. If you've ever seen The Last 5 Years, it's kind of like a giant flashback leading up to the present, where she went from being a famous actor to a waitress.
Mm. Kind of tough to do musicals in the silent film era. I have heard of the name Max Sennett. I did not. Mabel Normand, is it?
Yeah, Mabel Normand.
Yeah. Pretty song from that show?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot. There's a lot of music from that, actually.
Surely there would have to be, whenever you started rehearsing, there would have to be some songs that you weren't necessarily familiar with, right?
Mm-hmm. Many, yeah. Many. There was one from La Cage called Song on the Sand. That's such a pretty song. I never heard that before. And it's just a very gentle, soothing song with gorgeous, lush harmonies in it. I enjoy being backstage listening to that song.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Hello, Dolly's got to be in there, the title song from Dolly, right?
It is, yes.
Yeah. Is that a big production number?
It is. It's the conclusion to Act 1.
Oh, yeah. That would be a good act closer. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very good. And even still, like, our duet is from a musical that I'd never heard of, which is called Dear World. And there's a couple other songs from it as well. It's just interesting learning about some of his lesser-known stuff.
You know, I'd not heard of that either. When you first said it, what came to my mind was Dear Heart, which is a song from a movie. Dear World is a different thing altogether. I've not seen that show either. So you got Mame's got to be in there. The title song from Mame.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Got to be singing that. Yeah. What other classics are there? Before the Parade Passes By.
Yes.
That's from Dolly. That's got to be in there.
Yes, it is.
And It's Today is fairly well known, and that is in there as well.
There's also a Christmas song.
Yeah,
Mame,
we need a little Christmas. Yes.
That is in there as well.
That's a fun one.
That's a great trivia question. Actually, there are some holiday favorites, Christmas songs, that originated in Broadway shows.
Mm-hmm.
We Need a Little Christmas is from Mame. Here's another one. Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Did you know that comes from a show?
I did not.
Yeah. Meet Me in St. Louis.
Oh.
Yeah, Judy Garland first mm-hmm. sang that. And now it's a holiday classic. We're talking about Jerry's Girls, a review of the music and the numbers of Jerry Herman, legendary Broadway music man. Anybody have any idea how this show started? I heard it was kind of an accident that they put together a little thing and then the next thing you know, he did a couple of more shows, and somebody said, we could expand this into a full Broadway show.
I don't know.
I didn't know that.
You got me on that one. I do not know.
It started out as like a nightclub act, you know.
Well, it makes me wonder, because there's some shows from this musical in particular that actually came from other reviews that he did. So this might have been a work in progress, but maybe this one's the biggest one that he wrote. Because he had a review called Parade, actually, and some of the songs in it came from a two-act show called A Day in Hollywood, A Night in the Ukraine. And that itself is a review, and the second act is loosely based off of Anton Chekhov's one-act play. So there's a lot of marriage of different plays and musicals. So I think that might have been a trend for him.
Tell me a little bit, Anna, about your stage experience. Have you done a lot of MTG shows?
This is actually my second MTG show. My first one was just in the fall. I was in Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I did a lot of the Summer Dramatics Project growing up. In college, I actually have a degree in music, so I did a lot of musical theater at Westminster College, my alma mater.
It's a good school for music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a thoroughly wonderful experience going there. So I've done a lot of theater growing up.
And amateur theater since graduating.
Mm-hmm.
Paula, your resume runs from here to Renfrew. You've done a gazillion shows for MTG and in other places, too.
Yeah, I've done a lot. I've focused a lot on summer theater. It's just easier when I'm teaching during the year. So I've enjoyed the summer things for the past few years and did a lot of shows pre-children. So took a little sabbatical to raise kids, which is it's a good thing.
Were you in the Nonsense production last summer?
I was, yes. I was a mother superior.
MTG has done that show a couple of times.
Yeah, it was a fun show.
Always a hit. In fact, there are, I don't know, there's three or four different iterations of that show.
Yes.
Just the original one.
I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but this isn't about Nonsense, but the summer show for next year is a show that may or may not be called Bingo, and it looks to be a very fun show about some women who go to bingo and some relationships that have had some turmoil, and I think it's a lot about relationships. It looks like it'll be a very interactive, fun show. And so I'm guessing with the interactive part, perhaps everyone plays some bingo. Not sure. So next summer, make your plans to go to the theater.
I'm not familiar with that show, Ariana.
I'm not, no. It looks to be fun.
So how are you going to do much dancing when you're sitting at a bingo table? I don't know. We'll wait and see next summer. Huh?
Crazier things have been done.
Yeah.
Has the Musical Theater Guild announced its playbill for the new season yet? Does anybody know?
I know that the brochure has been printed, and I'm guessing that that will be released. And I think I can say this. We always have to make sure we have our contract signed and everything. Mm-hmm. But the fall show is always Patsy Cline, which we have done in the past. But it's a great show to bring back. And that will be performed at the Suck Up Theater. So that will be our big show.
I've seen that. Have you seen it?
I've not.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, wonderful
two women, that's
yes.
all. Very on-team cast, but it's powerhouse show for the two women.
Yes.
Yeah. That's great. Oh, and I'd be anxious to see that again.
It's exciting.
Yeah, I think it was at the Suck Up the last time. It was quite a few years ago now.
Mm-hmm. It was.
You, when you're doing musicals, by necessity sometimes you have to do repeats, but they do that on Broadway too.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always reviving a show from the past, sometimes multiple times. It's just writing a musical is a lot more difficult and arduous and time consuming than just writing a straight play.
Mm-hmm.
So and when you talk about amateur productions, there's only so many that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's going to do an amateur conduction of Miss Saigon, for example.
Yeah.
Too many people are going to be able to put a helicopter on stage.
Right. And the interesting thing about musical theater is that the rights are so much more expensive for shows than people probably imagine. So that's one of the decisions, the factors that goes into decision making for what shows we can and cannot do. Some things have not been released for us to do yet.
Yeah. If you have an equity, a professional company that's touring with a big-name show, the rights people will oftentimes not release it for amateur production if you're within, 100 miles. And, of course, anything playing in Pittsburgh, that disqualifies us. And a lot of folks may not realize just how much it costs to secure the rights to do a musical. I mean, if you're doing a play, yes, you pay royalties to the author, but for a musical, you pay big-time royalties.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. We have more expenses that way.
Even to some of the guys that are long gone, Rodgers and Hammerstein, those are some of the most expensive shows to produce.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you get a little bit of a break because you're doing it in an intimate theater?
We do. You pay by the size of your house.
Yeah.
So, yes, you do. And some of those things can be negotiated a little bit, but a show like Jerry's Girls, a review show, isn't one of our heaviest costs. But Beauty and the Beast, for example, would be a much more royalty-heavy show.
Were you able to come up with most of the, you got a gazillion costumes for this show. Hopefully you were able to come up with most of those without renting and stuff like that.
No, we did. Patrick Erkman must have a basement like I can't imagine because
he must be endless.
Yeah, he brought a lot of gowns and we just spent evenings trying on things and on things and on things. If you like blingy gowns, I think you'll be very satisfied with this show.
Yes.
There's a lot of sparkle, so that's fun.
That's right. Now that I think about all these wonderful female lead characters in these shows, going to be a lot of gowns parading on the stage.
Yes, a lot of sequins lost their lives in the creation of this show.
Lots of glitter.
No animals were harmed, but a lot of sequins lost their lives.
Yep.
Patrick Erkman is directing, Barb Oshie and Eric Snyder co-producing?
Yes.
What about your music? Who's handling that, Paula?
Chris Savannah is our musical director.
And do you need a choreographer for the...
Our choreographer is actually in the cast. It's Tina Zajax. And it's nice having her there at rehearsals because she gets to not only be in the moment, she also understands the logistics of being a cast member, knowing what's best and what flows.
One thing that I would imagine helps when you're doing a summer show is all of your rehearsals are actually in the same venue where you're going to do the show.
Yeah,
and that's
very nice.
Not usually the case with the Musical Theater Guild because the shows are done in different venues. What about scenery? Do you need much of that, or are you suggesting it with curtains and stuff?
No, there's a background and a few hand props, but there aren't even a lot of props.
I think the most props that you will see is 3 tables and 6 chairs for La Cage aux Folles, but other than that, a bag or two,
yeah,
a telescope.
That's really not it.
No.
Well, you can do it with those costumes. You can do a lot with the lighting to change change scenery. And change
our lighting personnel are really good. They've done a lot over the last couple of days that really makes it piece together.
Do you have, as I said, I've not seen this review, do you have blackouts between numbers, or do they kind of sag into one another?
No, there are blackouts, but they're very short. There are long enough to get one actor off stage and to get another, you know, back on again. So,
and sometimes it depends on the song, because there's a couple medleys within them where you end and start with another song pretty much instantly. So one person exits, another one gets on. Mm-hmm. And those ones flow quicker because they're pretty seamless. But other than that, there are blackouts.
We want to remind our listeners, we have another minute or two to talk with our guests. We're going to be talking about Alzheimer's. Coming up in just a couple of minutes on the program, we'll have a couple of guests joining with us to talk about that, Midge Hobaugh and Sarah Murphy. Right now, Paula Floyd and Ariana O'Donnell are here. We're talking about Jerry's Girls, a review based on the music and the numbers, the great songs of composer and lyricist Jerry Herman. Does Jerry Herman ever appear in this show?
No.
No.
are there any men at all in this show?
No, there are no men in our cast. There are surprises in our show.
But it is an all-female cast.
So we're going to leave you with that, wondering what we're talking about.
And if you want to know, get your ticket and see the show.
A little bit of a tease there.
MTGButler.org.
So with the summer show, is your rehearsal schedule about the same? I don't know.
We have about 4 days a week.
Up until this week, it was Sunday through Wednesday, 2 to 3 hours a day.
And you started late spring, I'm guessing, sometime?
May.
Auditions were in May, and then shortly after that, we started into the rehearsal process and just keep it pumping through ever since then.
Obviously, the two of you, I can tell just from chatting with you, I know Paula. I don't know you. Obviously, you're a Broadway fan. You like Broadway music, huh?
Yes, I do. I enjoy singing it a lot.
Yeah. There's something about a Broadway show that just, even talking about it, I get excited to
see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Going through college, I was trained classically, but I still love musical theater almost more than classical because there's so much more emotion you can wear right on your sleeve.
You were trained classically as a vocalist?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you like sing opera and stuff like that?
Yes, I've been in several operas, actually.
Really?
One of them was a world premiere, actually.
She has a lovely voice.
So you can sing.
You do,
in,
too.
Thanks.
You can sing in foreign languages then, huh?
Yes. Yes, I can.
Because it's a rare opera that's sung in English.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, gosh, we'll be anxious to see you
and
the rest
we'll look
of
forward.
Your cast.
Yeah.
Jerry's Girls. Sounds like a wonderful evening of entertainment. If you like Broadway music, my goodness gracious, there's 36 songs that you'll hear in this show. MTGButler.org,
That's
right?
Correct.
For tickets, get them online. The show opens this weekend. Paula, Ariana, nice to have you here today.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to talk with you. Okay. More to come. Stick around. Our next guest will be joining us by telephone in just a moment or so. You're listening to the Monday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. We will be right back.
Back in the day, the 60s to be exact. Oh, how we look forward to the Friday night dances, Funorama, Tumble In, and Purple Underground. Relive those times at your hometown center for entertainment, Tanglewood, at the Dream Dance, Saturday, July 14th. Doors open at 5, BYOB dinner by Chef George at 6, dancing at 7. One of the original Tumble In DJs, Dave Martin, will be spinning the discs. Guest DJ Mr. 60s and Bill Doo-Wop Forever Reichert will also be on hand. Tickets are $25 by calling 287-0021.
Losing a loved one is unbearable. It makes us feel so alone, so helpless. We ask ourselves, does anybody really understand how we feel? Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler offers a unique, sensitive program called Someone's Caring. It's been structured to help ease your emotional pain. There are group sessions with people who truly understand how you feel because they feel the same way. And being together helps. Men and women are invited to attend. For over 20 years, we've helped hundreds and hundreds of people cope with these intense feelings. We offer 5 programs, a grief support group for those who have lost a loved one, for survivors of a suicide, for bereaved parents, for those who have lost a pet, and individual sessions. They're conducted by our own trained bereavement specialist, Robin S. Miller. Call us at Thompson Miller, 724-287-3706, 287-3706. We can help. Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Only in the forest can you see this. And this. And this. But nothing beats the moment you see that.
Cool!
That's your child's eyes opening up to a world of possibilities.
I didn't know it could do that!
Because one trip to the forest can spark a world of difference.
There are some moments only the forest can inspire. Find yours at discovertheforest.org. Learn about forests near you and discover cool things to do when you go, like hiking, canoeing, fishing, or camping. Or create your own adventure with family and friends, and you might just see this. Your moment's out there. Find it at discovertheforest.org. That's discovertheforest.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
It's time for another exciting concert by the Musicians Concert Band. Hi, this is Jimmy Cipria, voice of the band, along with conductor-director Jeff Kroner, as he turns over the baton to several Slippery Rock University conductors, playing a wide variety of music and, of course, the Stars and Stripes Forever. The concert takes place Thursday, July 12th, 7:30 p.m., Butler Intermediate High School. That's Thursday, July 12th, 7:30, Butler Intermediate. See you there.
Saturday is always one fine day. It's me, Mr. 60s, the last hippie DJ of rock and roll. And I'm playing your favorites every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Here on WISR, we're keeping the oldies alive. That's what we do. And I thank you for letting me be part of your Saturday mornings.
We move into the next segment of our It's Your Turn program today. We're going to be talking about Alzheimer's. Our guests are two. They visit with us by telephone. Midge Hobaugh from St. Barnabas Health System. Midge, nice to have you with us here today.
Nice to be here.
And also with us is Sarah Murphy from the Alzheimer's Association. Sarah, hello to you as well.
Hi, good afternoon.
Is it the Alzheimer's Association of Greater Pittsburgh? Is that the group you're with?
Yeah, we are actually the Alzheimer's Association, the Greater PA chapter.
Oh, Greater PA.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we want to talk about that in general, and we want to talk about St. Barnabas in particular, Midge, because there is a memory care program at St. Barnabas, right?
There is. So we have a memory care program that runs in 4 of our buildings across 3 counties, Beaver, Allegheny, and, of course, Butler. and we offer memory care services in living assistance, as well as a secure dementia care unit, as well as our skilled nursing unit. So each program looks very different, but generally it is with the same concept in mind of increasing joy and lessening anxieties that sometimes come with dementia.
Sarah, tell our listeners about your role with the Alzheimer's Association of Greater Pennsylvania.
Sure. Well, I mentioned the Greater PA chapter, so I'm actually the senior program manager for the Greater PA chapter, and I'm housed in Erie, but with my position, I actually oversee the programs and services, the outreach and support staff that are within the western part of the state. So we actually cover our chapter 59 out of the 67 counties in Pennsylvania, and we have 6 regional offices. And so I oversee offices, the staff in Erie, Pittsburgh, and State College. And so basically our programs and services team, they ensure that we're delivering a big part of our mission statement, which is to enhance the care and support for caregivers and for those living with this disease. So we deliver general consumer-based education, we provide professional training, supportive programming for those in the community who may be caregivers or for those living with a diagnosis. And so, you know, we're overall here to provide the support for those who are impacted by this disease.
Midge, why is St. Barnabas partnering up with the Alzheimer's Association?
So, as Sarah mentioned, the Alzheimer's Association is a wealth of information as well as support, not only for caretakers in the community, but also professional caretakers, as you would find at St. Barnabas. And when we were looking for partnering with an organization such as the Alzheimer's Association, we were really looking for similar mission. And the Alzheimer's Association had a great reputation. So when we explored a little bit further, we realized that they are the leading health organization in Alzheimer's care support and research. And our mission melded very nicely with theirs. So it was really a wonderful discovery, so to speak, that the Alzheimer's Association had professional staff ready 24/7 that we could share with our own staff as well as our customers. So when Mrs. Jones or Mrs. Smith would come and visit their loved one and maybe spend the entire day with their loved one, when they would go home at night, oftentimes they would feel lonely or, you know, looking for more information, can't sleep a lot of the time. When you're a caretaker, you're worried about your loved one, whether you're caring for them at home mm-hmm. or if you place them in the care of St. Barnabas. So what we found is the 1-800 number that the Alzheimer's Association staffs with master-level clinicians, that made wonderful sense to not only bring that to our customers, but also for our staff as well. So our partnership between St. Barnabas and the Alzheimer's Association is really one of mutual decision-making sometimes, et cetera. So what the Alzheimer's Association is doing at the state and national level, we do that on a smaller scale here at St. Barnabas.
Yeah, there is a bit of misunderstanding on the part of a lot of people, Sarah, about Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's often presents with a form of dementia, but not all dementia is Alzheimer's. Am I correct on that?
And that's a very good question, because most of the time people always ask us, you know, really what is the difference between the two terms, the term Alzheimer's disease and the term dementia? And we express that by saying dementia is the overall term. It's like the umbrella term used for the group of conditions that cause some form of memory impairment. But people have to understand it's memory impairment that interferes with your ability to perform the activities of daily living, your everyday tasks. So there's many different forms of dementia. So it's similar to the term cancer. There are different forms of cancer. So dementia is the most, it's just a general term. And Alzheimer's disease is smack dab in the middle. It's the most common form or type of dementia. Right now it makes up about 60 to 80% of the cases of dementia. But there's other forms of dementia. There's vascular dementia. There's Parkinsonian's dementia. So there's other forms of dementia. But, you know, Alzheimer's disease is the most common type.
Many people think of Alzheimer's as a condition or disease that older people get, seniors, even advanced senior age. Is that true? Can Alzheimer's develop in younger people as well?
Absolutely. You know, dementia is one thing we have to say is dementia is not a normal part of aging. You know, we understand that is a progressive degenerative brain disorder. And what we do know is that over more than 5 million Americans are diagnosed with Alzheimer's-related dementia, but we also know that over 200,000 Americans are diagnosed under the age of 65, what's known as younger onset Alzheimer's disease. So, you know, it's not just an older person's disease. We do know that we do have risk factors. We do know that age is the greatest risk factor for Alzheimer's disease. But it's not everyone who gets older is not going to have Alzheimer's disease. It's not a normal part of aging.
We're chatting with Midge Hobaugh from St. Barnabas Health System and Sarah Murphy from the Alzheimer's Association. Midge, you're taking on a new role as an ambassador with the Alzheimer's Association and Congress. Tell us about this. What's this all about?
So the ambassador role, it's made up of, the ambassador leads a team of congressional team members, and those are voluntary positions, folks that are like-minded and passionate about advancing research and care, enhancing care and support for folks living with this disease. So part of this ambassadorship is to lead that team of congressional members and educate our local politicians, because unless we help our congressmen and women understand what their constituents are facing with this disease and make it applicable to them, what we do is, first of all, open our doors to Congress. Congressman Rothfuss joined us for a coffee with Congress so that he could hear personal stories of his constituents here at St. Barnabas. We hope to do that as well with Congressman Kelly, because technically we're really all in the same professions of helping people. We just do it a little bit differently. So my day-to-day as an ambassador, as an advocate, really is to provide the best care that I can here at St. Barnabas, as well as our staff of memory care specialists in each building actually implementing the program. But part of being an advocate is also going to the next step and including our legislators so that they understand what their constituents are actually going through. And a lot of the time, whenever you hear, oh, well, you know, congressional team member, that might not be for me, I ask that families, as well as other professionals in similar roles that I hold, that you find your maybe advocacy niche in whatever way makes sense for you. But with this particular role, our congressmen, Congressman Kelly, Congressman Rothfuss, Lamb and Doyle, all of those folks have been very open to hear what our plight is and what we need from them. So part of the ambassador role is, again, pulling the congressman closer to his constituent, his or her constituent, so that they can share their own personal story. And if we can lend our stories to the congressmen, then they're not only voting fiscally, but they're also voting out of what does my constituent base really need. And as Sarah mentioned, there's over 5.5 million residents across the country living with Alzheimer's disease, and there is no effective treatment to slow the disease, and there's no cure, unfortunately. So by 2050, if we continue down that path, there's going to be over 14 million Americans living with this disease. So it really does give you pause, and we really do need, as I said, you know, we're all in the business of helping folks. We really do need our congressmen and women to support increased funding to hopefully eventually eradicate the disease. But in the meantime, we also need support to treat the disease. And St. Barnabas uses a behaviorist perspective and cognitive stimulation for the purpose of making them happy and decreasing the anxieties in hopes of not using as many psychiatric medications, which do have side effects, of course. So that is part of what the ambassador role looks like. It's just bringing like-minded folks that are passionate about ending this disease, and in the meantime, providing the best care for those living with the disease. It's just bringing those folks together and making some change because, you know, we have definitely advanced research in the most recent years, and now this issue of Alzheimer's disease is becoming a local and state election issue. And the more attention is given to something, then, of course, hopefully more funding is put behind it as well.
Sarah, would it be fair to say that although Alzheimer's obviously was around and some people knew about it, but when it was announced that former President Reagan was suffering from Alzheimer's disease, that really brought it to the public fore, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and I everything that Midge said, I mean, I'm just, first of all, so proud of Midge and the relationship that we have with St. Barnabas because, you know, knowledge is power. And the more that our local legislators, they know about the grassroots advocates, you know, like Midge and her team, the more impact that we can make on the Hill. That's essentially what our ambassadors are. They're grassroots volunteers. And going back to awareness, you know, when you mentioned Ronald Reagan, I think we are finding that we are seeing an increase of awareness and attention to this disease due to people are, there's a stigma, you know, there's a stigma. When I say Alzheimer's disease, people think automatically, they think older people or they don't think happy thoughts. But what we're doing by our advocacy efforts and by people like Midge and our other volunteers is we're reducing the stigma behind this disease. And for more people to be open about it and to share and to say, yes, you know, I'm living with this disease, but I'm still living the best quality life that I can. And partnering with people like St. Barnabas Health System who are providing quality care, that's what we're all about. And so letting people know that it's okay to talk about it, it's okay to reach out to the Alzheimer's Association to get the needed support, to attend support groups, that's very important. And our ambassadors are there to make that impact. You know, we're all about making the impact in the community, but most of all, making the impact by reaching out to Congress and really developing a strong network of grassroots advocates, communicating and developing those relationships with the elected officials. It's really vital and crucial to achieve our mission of raising awareness about Alzheimer's disease in Congress to the state legislators and going back to the local communities.
There's a piece of legislation known as the BOLD Act. My guess is that that's an acronym for something. Can either of you tell me?
You should know that, right? We have lots of acronyms. Well, I tell you, this is something that I want everyone to be aware of. And one thing is I want to quote, actually, the formal U.S. Surgeon General, Dr. David Satcher, which really kind of brought about the inspiration behind the BOLD Act. Basically, Alzheimer's disease is the most under-recognized threat to public health in the 21st century. We have to understand that Alzheimer's disease is a public health crisis. So with that being recognized, with the work of bipartisan congressional champions, the Alzheimer's Association was really instrumental in developing and introducing building our largest Dementia Infrastructure for Alzheimer's Act. So BOLD, you know, it's really a bill that's really going to help create Alzheimer's disease as a public health awareness across the country to really implement effective Alzheimer's intervention focused on public health issues. So with that being said, it's really going to direct the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, to increase education, public health officials, healthcare professionals, the general public about brain health, about health disparities, you know, and also bringing intervention on focus on priorities such as early detection, increasing that. So a big, big thing that we're trying to do with the Alzheimer's Association and with our partners is to let people know, you know, these are the warning signs for Alzheimer's disease. This isn't normal aging. You know, what's the difference between what's normal age-related memory loss versus something more serious like Alzheimer's disease? So getting people to the physician as soon as they might start noticing some of these warning signs. Early detection, diagnosis, reducing risk to help prevent hospitalizations, you know, supporting the needs for caregivers and care planning for people with this disease. This act also helps to award cooperative agreements with public health departments. So it's really bringing, again, going back to expanding our reach and developing relationships and partnerships, making sure that's at the first and foremost of this. And it also includes data collection, analysis, and timely reporting. But really, this essentially is bringing awareness to the public health arena that Alzheimer's disease is a public health crisis, and we want to bring awareness to the public health entities and then to the general communities. So this is something I think is really important. If people don't get anything out of this interview today, just to understand that this is a public health issue, and we need to be addressing it within the public health entities.
Has this act just been proposed, or has it already been passed?
No, it's being proposed. So we're actually looking for co-sponsorship, you know, with the local legislators, and this is in its second year.
And what can listeners do to help if they feel so moved?
Well, I think the one thing that local listeners can do is thank Congressman Kelly, because as of June 28th, he was co-sponsoring this bold act. So the other thing that if you are in Allegheny County listening, et cetera, please contact your congressman and tell them that you support the bold act and request that they do as well. The more that they hear from their constituents, the more that this is brought to the forefront, because Congress wants to know what their constituents' needs are. So it's really the everyday person who is fighting some type of battle with dementia. Those are the people that our legislators will most listen to. And it's really a privilege to be able to, and I'm sure you feel the same way, Sarah, it's really a privilege to be able to go to Capitol Hill and advocate on behalf of so many people that can't get there on their own. But what they can do is pick up the phone and call their congressman's office. They can go online and contact their congressman that way, so that, you know, your Congress understands what your needs are. And eventually, hopefully, we can get to that goal of eradicating the disease long term.
We have a couple of more minutes to chat with our guests. I must pause for a quick break here. So, Midge, Sarah, stay right where you are. We'll be back in just a moment. One of our sponsors on the program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. What do they do? Well, very simple. They package your items for shipping. And it's really, really convenient. It means that you don't have to worry about finding the right size box, too big, too small, or finding the bubble wrap or the mailing labels or the special tape that you need, any of that stuff. Just take your items to Go on Postal Butler, and they'll package them for you for shipping. And you can ship them any way you want, by the way. U.S. Postal Service, UPS, FedEx, they'll handle that all for you. They're located just off Newcastle Road, right behind Villa Grande Restaurant. Going to Postal Butler, open Monday through Friday. Oh, yes, and they have local honey there, too. It's delicious. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Have you tried them yet? I have. Very, very convenient, very fast service, and very reasonable, too. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. We're chatting with Midge Hobaugh and also Sarah Murphy. St. Barnabas Health System and the Alzheimer's Association are partnering up to try to advocate for passage of this bold act and getting Congress and everyone to realize that Alzheimer's is a public health issue. Sarah Murphy, is the incidence of Alzheimer's increasing that much, or are we just diagnosing it better these days?
It's a combination of both. I think, you know, we look at as we are living longer, you know, going back to the greatest risk factor is age. 1 out of 9 Americans over the age of 65 has Alzheimer's disease. So we do see that an increase. We also are better able to diagnose it. We used to refer to this disease as senile or crazy. You know, we actually now understand that this is a fatal progressive brain disorder. So, you know, physicians are better able to diagnose it. We're bringing better awareness about it. But we do see that with the trajectory of the disease, today more than, 5 million people are living with this disease. But without medical breakthroughs, by 2050, it's projected to reach 14 million, I think as Midge had mentioned earlier. It is the most expensive disease in America. We have guesstimated it will cost $277 billion direct cost to Medicare, Medicaid. So we take a lot of these statistics. You know, a lot of people don't find statistics interesting, but this is part of the platform and part of the information that we do share when we do advocacy and go visit our local congressmen. We're seeing an increase of funding over the past few years, actually historic amount, quadrupled. For National Institutes on Health on funding for this disease, and a lot of it has to do with the impact that our local advocates are having. And so I want to go back to how people can reach out. I think it's important for listeners to be aware that we do have a 24/7 helpline through the Alzheimer's Association, and I want to make sure that I share that with everyone today. If they have any questions, 24 hours, 7 days a week, you know, if they want more information about the disease, if they want to know, how can I get a diagnosis, or if they want to know where's the closest support group to me. I certainly encourage people to call our 24/7 helpline because it will be able to provide them that information as soon as they're interested in wanting to know that. And that number is 1-800-272-3900. That's 3900. And I'll say that again. That's 1-800-272-3900. It's the best way to get a hold of us, and you actually will get a person on the other end to answer the phone. That's the beauty of our helpline.
Midge, Sarah, thanks very much for being with us today. It's very informative. Midge Hobaugh from St. Barnabas Health System, Sarah Murphy from the Alzheimer's Association. Thanks again for being with us, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure. So long now.
Bye-bye.
We need to check midday lottery numbers. We'll do that and be right back to wrap up here today.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 5151. Pick three, 200, 200. Pick 4, 2510. Pick 5, 85979. The wild ball for each of those is 2. The treasure hunt, 9, 13, 19, 27, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $25,000.
Well, we thank our guests visiting with us today. We talked with Robin Weber from the National Aviary down in Pittsburgh. And also Ariana O'Donnell and Paula Floyd, cast members from the Musical Theater Guild's summer show, Jerry's Girls, which runs the next 2 weekends at the William A. Leonard Performance Hall at the far end of Butler Memorial Park. The show opens this Friday night, Friday, Saturday, and then the following weekend, Friday, Saturday, plus a Sunday matinee. And certainly Midge Hobaugh and Sarah Murphy visiting with us on the final segment of the program today. A program note, coming up, we have Pirate Baseball tonight here on WISR. The Pirates begin a series with the powerhouse Washington Nationals. The Bucks coming off a 4-1 victory over Philadelphia yesterday. airtime for Pirate Warm-Up here on WISR tonight, 6:40 from PNC Park. Pirate Baseball here on WISR tonight. I'm Dave Malarkey. That wraps up our program for today. Enjoy the rest of the day, the beautiful weather. We'll see you tomorrow at 12:30 with the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR, WISR 680 in Butler.
It's up-to-the-minute local, national, and world news from WISR, Butler, Pennsylvania, and the CBS Radio News Network.